Today is September 27th, 2010, Radha-Dash, class on Varnashram. So when we talked about socioeconomic status, what were the three main indicators of socioeconomic status?
Wealth, occupation, and education.
Wealth, occupation, and education. And we talked about ascribed status and?
Achieved
status. So in Varnashram, what's the most important indicator of status? What are the indicators of status?
Achieved,
if we go by the strict Vedic view.
And
do we look in any, what about, does it have anything to do with wealth? Does your status have anything to do with wealth?
It can, to a certain point.
Okay, to a certain point. Does it have anything to do with education?
Yes.
Does it have anything to do with occupation?
Yes.
Definitely. The main indicator. Okay, we're going to be looking almost exclusively today at Varna rather than at Ashram. So we're going to look at, we're practically not going to look at Ashram at all unless people really want to discuss it. All right, so our first point, just like we made the first point, we talked about sociological stratification, is that we're not this body.
No.
Like that picture?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. We are not this body. And this is a very important point. And it's interesting, I made one show with all the quotes. And then I made another show where I just took all the quotes out and just put in the points, or took most of the quotes out and put in the points. So you wouldn't just have screen after screen of long quotes to look at. So Prabhupada talks about in the Bhagavad Gita how there's two swadharmas, or two duties of the soul, and one of them, two duties of the self, one of them is according to the soul. So the soul has the swadharma of devotional service, which is the nine processes of devotional service. And that is equal to everyone. And I really like what you said, Nimai, about that one reason that we have such an open society in ISKCON is because our real definition of success doesn't really have to do with your social stratification. And I believe that this is the key to having a functioning society where we have social differences and yet we don't have the exploitation of social classes. And saying the definition of success is not getting high social status. The definition of success is achieving pure devotional service. And that's another interesting thing if we talk about someone like Iyendra, who by standards of SES didn't have very high social status. He didn't have any kind of position. You know, so in ISKCON, we regularly recognize that the real success is the achievement of devotional service. Then the other swadharma is according to the body, and according to two things of the body, according to what modes of nature your body is in, and according to basically your age, which is ashram, which you were talking about before, age. Okay, our famous verse, Chaturvanya Mayashristam, Guna Karma Vivagasaha. So I don't have very many quotes in this slideshow. If you want to see a slideshow with quotes, I have another one like this that's tons of quotes. So guna and karma. Karma is your? What do we mean by karma?
And karma is your?
Work.
Your work, your occupation. What do you do for a?
Living.
Okay. So what's Prabhupada denouncing here? What's he advocating? What's he denouncing?
The caste system in India.
Okay, but what specifically in terms of sociology?
Ascribed
status.
Yeah.
Prabhupada's saying this idea of ascribed status is nonsense. And do you all know the example of truthfulness? Of the little boy who came to the teacher and said, I want to be your student. And he said, I only take Brahmin students. Who's your father? And the boy goes home and he says, I don't know who my father is. I never met him. I'll have to ask my mother. And he goes and asks his mother and she says, you know, I'm really sorry, but I had relations with a lot of men and I have no idea who your father is. And maybe in modern society that's not shameful, but even in modern society 20, 30 years ago that used to be shameful. And maybe it's even still shameful. If you said, you know, God, even my mother doesn't know who my father is. So what to speak of in that society? But he was willing to say them. And his teacher said, if you're truthful enough to admit that your mother doesn't know who your father is, then you are a Brahmin. You'd be willing to tell the truth even at personal expense.
Nice one.
Isn't that nice? So that's a good indicator of what a Brahmin is. Willing to tell the truth even at personal expense. It's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada talks about Varna as being a material arrangement and ashram as being a spiritual arrangement. As I said, I'm not going to talk much about ashram in this presentation. I'm going to talk mostly about Varna. But I find it really interesting that Srila Prabhupada calls the ashrams a spiritual system. Okay, so the varnas are according to the modes of nature. Ashram is basically according to age. Varnas are according to the modes of nature. We got a really nice article submitted to BTG recently about what are modes of nature. And the author talks about them, that really material nature is just prakriti. But prakriti in different states, the same material nature in different states, is called the different modes. And he compared it to water that can be solid, liquid, or gas at different temperatures. Isn't that a nice analogy? I really like it. Now, when water's in a gas state, you can see through it very clearly. When it's a liquid state, you can see through it distorted. When it's an ice state, you can hardly see through it at all. And that's a good analogy of the modes of nature. You know, I've often given the analogy of a clear window, a translucent window, and just the curtains are drawn. So it's really how dense material nature is covering you. So it's the same material nature, but in different densities, it affects you differently. So the varnas are determined by basically the density of nature. And I hope this turned out right. The colors on the screen are not the same. And I'm going to show you on my laptop because I spent about 20 minutes getting these colors. It's supposed to be yellow and red and blue. So the idea is that those in the mode of goodness, they're in yellow. Those in the mode of passion are in red. In mixed passion and ignorance are in purple. And in ignorance are in blue. Of course, nobody's in total ignorance. Total ignorance is like the table. And if you're in total goodness, then you're in the spiritual world. And it's pretty hard to be in pure passion also. Of course, this is our famous Bhagavad Gita verse. And many people have noted that verses 42 to 44 in chapter 18. And many people have noted that Krishna is describing the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas by qualities and the Vaishyas and the Shudras by occupation. There's also a very nice description, which is in my other PowerPoint, from the 7th canto. And I suggest if you want to go look up all the quotes, go look in the 7th canto, where the specific duties of each are delineated. And I have just a few of them here. Actually, maybe I didn't put any of them here. Maybe I took them all out. So here Narada Muni concludes, after he tells all the symptoms, he says, it doesn't matter where you're born, it depends on what symptoms you're showing. Okay, I did put a few of them in here. So what are the Brahmins' occupations? Study the Vedas, teach the Vedas, worship the deity, teach others how to worship, accept charity, and to give charity. And Prabhupada says that they speak knowledge and whatever their disciples contribute. Then Kshatriyas, their main duty is protecting. And a Kshatriya can also study the Vedas and worship the deities and give charity. In fact, a Kshatriya is supposed to be giving a lot of charity. He can live by taxes. And Vaishyas, I really like this from the 16th chapter, where Prabhupada talks about that the Vaishyas should have an honest livelihood. I gave a presentation at Ernst & Young in London, a big speculative business firm, investment bankers. And I said, you know, the people who generate wealth for society must generate honest wealth. And of course, all these people are generating false wealth. Real wealth. Agriculture, trade, and protection of cows. So agriculture means, of course, the land. And trade, what you can trade, what you get from the land. Not only what you get from the land doesn't just mean food, it also means fiber. It would also mean minerals, metals. It would include also what you may get from the oceans, what you get from natural resources, and taking care of cows, and not only cows, but Krishna took care of not only cows. You know what other animals Krishna took care of?
Peacocks.
Buffaloes and? Goats.
How do you adapt this to the current society?
Give me a minute. All right. So the Shudras, they're supposed to be assistants, and they engage in industry and art. All right. So the Brahmana should be engaged in studying Vedic literature. Kshatriya is supposed to protect the human beings. Vaishya is supposed to protect the cows. All right, so now we have here my little summary. So these are our four Varnas. Please remember where they are, because I'm not going to tell you where they are in the following slides. So please remember, we're going clockwise. Okay? Mm-hmm. Here's our roles. The Brahmanas are the teachers, priests, doctors, counselors. Satras are government, soldiers, landlords. Vaishyas are farmers, traders, and business. And the Shudras are workers and artists. And here's a little picture. Okay, what kind of education do they receive? So if you look about, say, Lord Ramachandra, he left school when he was 15, 16. Prabhupada talks about the Vaishyas go to school till they're 10 or 12. The Shudras would mostly get an practical education from their parents. Perhaps they'd learn some basic reading and writing. Prabhupada talks about the Brahmins going to school till they're 20 or 25. So I'm equating this in modern society to the Shudras are getting mostly a skill-based education, maybe some basic education in reading and writing. The Vaishyas are getting a primary school education. The Kshatriyas are getting a secondary school education, and only the Brahmanas are getting a university education. Now, of course, in modern society, we push everybody to get a university education, and what happens? Or at least a secondary.
A lot of people don't succeed.
A lot of people just don't make it. And so what have we done to education in order to make everybody succeed? We've lowered the standards. If you compare what's in the educational books from 70, 80, or 100 years ago to what's in the educational books now, you'll see that we've lowered the standards. You'll see that basically what's now a university education used to be more like a secondary education. And we're even covering some things that used to be taught in primary school at the university level.
This is accepted by studies, right?
Yeah.
This is from
definitely. There's been a dumbing down of the education. Even the courses that are offered. You go to a lot of colleges today, they're offering courses that are supposed to be taught in secondary school. Basic English grammar, basic writing, basic mathematics. I mean, they're offering courses that not that long ago, again, were taught at that upper level of primary school. So why are they doing that? They're doing that because they're getting people who really... And it's interesting, my own experience as a teacher is that it's not that the people don't have, in some cases, but in general, it's not that they don't have the ability, they don't have the interest. They don't have the interest. I mean, you look at people and they have the brain. It's not that they don't have the technical ability. They're just not interested. And then they get into a lot of trouble. I think Germany's one of the leaders in doing more apprenticeship education.
More what?
Apprenticeship education. Apprenticeship, where you learn something by studying under someone else. I mean, it used to be you'd be a doctor and a lawyer, not by going to school so much, but by working with a doctor and a lawyer. So one of the ways that we can start applying Varnashram is by starting to change the education system. And we can start having much more practical education at a lower level. We can start giving practical education from the age of 10 or 12 in school. And the only people who should be getting a purely academic education should be the Brahmanas, especially after 15, 16. And even the brahmanas, many of them are going to become things, people like astrologers or like doctors, and then they're going to need it, or pujaris, like right now we have our pujari school. So not all the brahmanas are even going to become doctors. And right now we're not giving people practical vocational training often until they're in their 20s. Before we start even thinking about giving people practical training in a livelihood. And it was also interesting, one, the devotee who met with me yesterday mentioned that in the 15 years or so that he was a brahmachari, he never received practical training for a livelihood. Prabhupada says gurukula means training in character as well as practical training for a livelihood. So one of the ways that we can institute varnashram is we can start training people for a livelihood, because varna means how you make your living. How do you get your food and your, you know, how do you get your potatoes and your kurta and your chairs, things like that. What do you do to make a living? And that should be started fairly early, certainly by age 10 or 12. Should be able to notice people's nature and train them accordingly. And not just being giving everybody the same education. Not a one-size-fits-all education. And not forcing higher academic education on people who really couldn't care less about it. I mean, one of our problems is that the modern sudra jobs now require a lot of specialized education. But frankly, a lot of that could be given at a young age. I mean, my son, who's a computer programmer, started learning programming from my husband when he was about 11. And by the time he was 15 or 16, he knew more than the people who had a bachelor's degree in computer science. He went and got his bachelor's degree in computer science simply because there were a lot of jobs he couldn't get without the degree. They didn't care how much he knew or how good he was. But I mean, he would regularly tell me, he said, Mata, I know much more than the people in my office who have master's degrees in computer science. And he learned all that by age 15. So even a lot of the technical knowledge that's needed for a lot of the worker jobs in modern society does not require a high level of education. And you all know that a lot of what you learned in secondary school you're never going to use any time in your life. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows that studying the different parts of the Latin names of the roots of the dahlia plant are not going to be of any use to you, and yes, unless you're a botanist. All right, now we're looking, of course, at SES, and it's interesting. Well, what's interesting about this?
Is that the highest has simple Vedic necessity?
Yes. So that the Vedic standard of status was not based primarily on wealth. Because the people with the highest status in society intentionally kept themselves at a low level of wealth. Does this apply, by the way, today to people who have brahminical occupations?
Yeah, no.
To some extent. Teachers are not paid very much.
Doctors are paid.
A lot of research scientists are not paid very much. Some doctors are paid.
Well, I personally see a lot of devotees that are brahmanas that actually do have a lot. Receive much more money than any other circle.
Well, you find that also in the Shastra. Sometimes there's references to rich brahmanas. So you'll find that there are certain brahmanas who would become very rich. But we see even in modern society that there's people who are priests and ministers and teachers and professors and researchers who have high education and high occupational status and brahminical occupations, don't generally have a lot of wealth. There was one man recently who solved a decades-old mathematical puzzle. I can't remember the details at all. It was something for which there was a huge amount of prize money. And he went off in solitude for a while, thought about it, came back and said, I don't want the money. So they just gave it to charity. And he's received, I mean, he solved a mathematical puzzle that was bewildering people for decades. And he's evidently won a lot of mathematical awards, and every time he turns down the money. So that's very good. Now, in ISKCON, we definitely have a problem with distribution of wealth, don't we? By the way, what are the brahmanas supposed to do with the wealth that they collect? The brahmanas might collect a lot of money in charity.
Yeah, they basically, the idea was to use it for deity worship and for should be used for Krishna. Especially the money which was given to Brahman for Krishna says in Bhagavatam that if the donations are given for the deity worship and are not used for the deity worship, such a person goes is born like a worm eating crustacean.
That sounds lovely. Prabhupada says that people are collecting pieces of tortoise. I mean, Prabhupada's very emphatic that if you live by charity, you shouldn't misspend even a farthing, he says. There's no farthings in the world anymore. You shouldn't misspend a penny. So the brahmanas are, I mean, even in a Vedic society, they were often given incredible amounts of wealth. So the concept of giving huge wealth to the brahmanas is certainly bona fide. But like a Brahmin grihastha who gets a lot of wealth, what's he supposed to do with all that wealth? Give it away how soon?
Mm-hmm.
That day. Especially a grihastha who lives on charity, he's supposed to give away any excess wealth that day. He's not supposed to keep for the next day. Of course, that may not be practical if you're trying to do a project. You know, if you're trying to build a temple, you may not want to like give all the donations away that you don't use that day.
These are donations for a particular project.
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, 10 years ago or so, Hari Kesh gave us a lot of money for education. We'd get a certain amount every month, and he'd say, if you don't spend all the money that month, I won't give you any money next month. Mm-hmm. And it pushed us to make very bad financial decisions. You know, sometimes you wanted to you save up your money for something in particular and not spend it all that month. But the idea is that the Brahmins are supposed to get a lot of charity, but they keep themselves personally in a poverty-stricken. They live very, very simply with just what they need. And, of course, that's what Srila Prabhupada did. Srila Prabhupada was given a tremendous amount of wealth. And, of course, sometimes Prabhupada was given very nice places to stay. But Prabhupada really, he had very minimal personal possessions. And he was using that wealth to build the society and to preach. So, especially the brahmanas can be given a lot of wealth because they know what to do with it. That's the idea. They're not going to use it for their own sense gratification. And you can see this before the modern welfare state, where the churches were given a lot of money and they would spend it on charity. And of course, modern society, we see that the Sudras get a lot of money. And in Vedic society, the Sudras are supposed to get. They're supposed to get, they'll be given houses, and they'll be given clothes, and they'll be given food, and they'll be given ornaments, but not cash. And those of us who did book distribution, we saw that if you approach Sudras, they had money on Friday and they were broke on Monday. And you saw it over and over again. You know, if you got to them on Friday, they had so much money, and if you went to them on Monday, they were broke.
That day in the month where they get famous.
That one day in the week or in the month. And what did they spend it? They spent it on useless. I was just talking to one devotee who told me that she said, my husband never gave any money to the family. She said he'd earn money, he'd spend it all on alcohol, on prostitutes, whatever. She said, I never saw any of it. I had to go out and work and maintain the family myself. She said he would just come home to sleep and to eat. So that's, if someone's a Shudra, then they don't know how to spend money. They'll spend it on immediate, something they immediately need. They don't see doing good with money. What does the Vaishya do with money?
Makes more money.
And where's all the money coming from in this society? It's all coming from the Vaishyas. The Vaishyas are generating wealth. Okay, which I... Yeah?
I understand that the Shudras, even though they weren't dealing with money, were very prosperous, very well equipped with sense gratificatory...
Well, they'd have to be, otherwise how could they be happy?
Yeah, like that.
Because if you didn't give the Shudras proper facility for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then you'd have a revolution on your hands.
So the Vaishyas were giving them?
The Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and the Brahmanas.
There must be a very clear system to give to the Shudras. No?
Yeah, the Brahmanas are giving because the Brahmanas are naturally just giving. The Kshatriyas, they have to make sure everybody's taken care of. And you have some Shudras in your employ. I mean, if you think about... Let's say the arts. You know, it used to be that the Kshatriyas were the patrons of the arts. The royalty, the government, they were the ones who were paying for there to be music and art in the society because they had the money to spend on something that wasn't a physical necessity.
Yeah, I remember in Krishna book,
described Krishna and Parvati with all the queens and
yes.
And then at the end of the party, then
they give away
they
all
give
their
away all the dresses. They only wear once. You know, that's the serious party. So you dress only for once, and then it's all given away to the musicians. Yeah, basically the shudras who are helping there.
And they're getting stuff that's decorated with gold and jewels. Now this I feel, yeah, go ahead.
I just had a question, we didn't say how come the Kshatriyas have such high income? I mean, is it a necessity that they have to be really well off?
Well, the Kshatriyas also, they give their money in charity, but because the Kshatriyas are taking the responsibility of protection, they're given some extra facility.
If you're a person that has to represent power, you need to have wealth.
Well, yeah, and why you need to have wealth? Because we were talking about that wealth is one of the main markers of high status in society. So if people are going to respect you, you've got to have some of those markers of respect. Now, this I think is my most important slide, and I would say that this particular slide really gives the key to how the stratification of Varnashram works and what in the world is wrong with ISKCON. And why we and where our gap is in ISKCON. That each member of society has a certain area that they're supposed to offer to Krishna, they're supposed to protect, they're supposed to make sure that this area is not being exploited, that this is being used properly in the service of the Lord. So the brahmanas are supposed to protect knowledge. Right now, the brahmanas allow their knowledge to be exploited. They allow business people and government to exploit their research skills, right? And they publish studies that support a particular pharmaceutical company or particular government endeavor because they're in the employ of the government or they're in the employ of business. They come up with false theories that they know are false. I mean, just like we're talking about saying there's no biological basis to race. So why are the brahmanas putting out such sort of propaganda that they know is false? Because they're in the employ of the government or they're in the employ of business. And they're not interested in putting forth the truth. So they're supposed to protect knowledge. And one way the brahmanas protect knowledge is by keeping themselves in poverty. They can't be bought. Now, they put themselves in where no one can buy them. Where they're accustomed to being austere. They don't become accustomed to a high standard of sense gratification. And therefore, if nobody gives them any money, they're fine. They'll pick some fruit, they'll bake some rice, and they'll be happy. And that way they're willing to speak the truth whether anybody maintains them or not. And to be a Brahmin, to really be a Brahmana, you've got to be willing to do that. Which means that a real Brahmana cannot have fixed expenses. When you're in a society with fixed expenses, as soon as you have fixed expenses, you have to have a fixed income. As soon as you need a fixed income, you have to have some guarantee of getting that fixed income. As soon as you have that guarantee, then you sold yourself. That you can't speak the truth anymore, because if you speak the truth, you won't get your fixed income, and if you don't get your fixed income, you can't pay your fixed expenses. So that means if you really want to be a Brahmana, you've got to find a way to live without fixed expenses. You've got to find a way to live very, 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 very simply. So that whatever people give, they give, and whatever people don't give, they don't give. And you're not dependent on what people give you. And that's difficult for a grihastha. Therefore, a lot of Brahmin grihasthas, instead of just living strictly on charity, will be things like doctors and astrologers, will be things like a priest in a temple. So not all Brahmanas just sit down and study the Vedas, and whatever Krishna sends there to their door, they take it. I mean, there are, for example, in Orthodox Judaism, there's the concept that the whole village should support scholars. And this is in the old, you know, it's there, still in the Orthodox, that in every community there are some men who devote themselves to lifelong scholarship. They don't teach, they just study. They study and research. Of course, we have people like that also in modern society. They just research and publish their research, but they don't teach. And those people were maintained by the society. And the old idea, and I don't know if you noticed this, but it was there in some of the articles about the different denominations, different demarcations of a religion as a church or a denomination or a sect. The old idea was that the priest, the minister, the rabbi was a scholar. Mostly a scholar. more than a performer of rituals, and certainly not a manager, but they were a scholar. And the idea that the community would support the scholars in the village. And I know, you know, in Jewish culture, it's considered very prestigious to marry your daughter to a scholar who has no occupation other than study. And it was considered auspicious to maintain a son-in-law who was a scholar. So instead of the girl moving to the son's house, the son would move into the boy's house. So Aravindra Bhattacharya did this with his son-in-law. You maintain the son-in-law, and the whole village contributes to the scholarship. So it would be very nice if we started doing that in our ISKCON societies. Remember, we talked in the beginning about the lack of information, that our leaders are not gathering good information on which to make decisions. Well, this applies to Shastric research as well. You know, I'm on the Shastric Advisory Council to the GBC. And we just had an incident, and I don't want to say any details because it's being recorded, but we just had an instance where the GBC asked the Shastric Advisory Council to do some research on a particular topic. We just started gearing up to do the research, and then they said, oh, no, we made a decision anyway. We don't need your research. So they made a decision that's not based on any kind of research. And in looking at many of the decisions that our leaders have made over the years, especially if we look at some of the things in the ISKCON history course, we'll see that a lot of those decisions are made without reference to research. Nobody is sitting down and saying, okay, what's the research behind this? And how do you research? How do you do a whole lot of research when you're doing 10 million other things? It's hard, right? You know, just like the succession committee, they've researched what did Prabhupada say the GBC should do. But it's really hard if you're running a college to sit down and do research. And there are certain ones of us in the society, you know, and I'm one of them, where the leaders will sometimes, you know, say, hey, here's a research project. Could you research it for me? Or like Hari Sariprabhu just researched a 150-page paper on the document of management and, again, what Prabhupada saw for the GBC. But we really don't have a coterie of scholars that are maintained by the society just to do research. You know, Hari Sari's just started this library in Calcutta. But if you want to stay there, you've got to pay to stay there. You know, you've got to pay for the room. You've got to pay for the privilege of researching. And if we want to build a Varnashram society, we should be contributing to real brahmanas who live very simply and are doing nothing but research. Anyway, grihastha brahmanas who do need to have some sort of set income generally have some sort of occupation where they're likely to get money on a regular basis, such as doing astrology, such as being a physician, such as being, in modern society, the astrologer would be your therapist and your counselor, psychologist, you know, or they work as a priest in a temple, or they do regular yajnas for people. And we've seen there's a lot of devotees in ISKCON who are getting these sort of householder brahmanas who are taking on these sort of occupations. But that's how the Brahmin protects knowledge. The Brahmana protects knowledge by not putting himself in a position where anybody else can control him. And if you really want to be a Brahmana, you cannot work for a salary. It just doesn't work. Then I'm going to go in another order. The Shudras are supposed to protect the arts, the crafts, and the skills. The Shudras are supposed to make sure that the arts, the crafts, and the skills are all glorifying Krishna and are all being done in a pure way, not a sensuous way, and are being done without exploitation of nature. So that's the responsibility of the Shudras. Also, it was an incredible verse that I found in the Bhagavatam where it says that the Shudras are supposed to protect the Brahmanas and the cows. I thought that was really interesting. You know, that the people in general are supposed to make sure that the Brahmins and the cows are not being exploited. But definitely the Shudras are supposed to protect the skills. Nowadays, the skills are lost. They're gone. Everything's been put into the factories. The Shudras have failed to protect their skills. So, you know, the people who are keeping alive, weaving rugs, dyeing cloth, making pottery, the traditional arts of dance and painting, and all of the skills that made a society, there are still some people in the world keeping those things alive. And they're actually doing the role of the Shudras in society. Now, although we talk about the Shudras as dependent, there's varieties of dependence and independence. So some Shudras are going to have their own craft shop, and others are going to just be the servant of the master. The Shudras are the only ones that work in a dependent fashion. Prabhupada said, the Shudra is happy if he gets a good job and a wife and a house. You know, I have some job, I have some salary, I'm taken care of, then the Shudra is happy. Now I'm going to go up to the Vaishyas. The Vaishyas are supposed to protect all the natural resources and the animals because that's where wealth comes from. The Shudras can't do their skills unless the Vaishyas are providing the natural resources with which they do their skills, the fabrics, the minerals. So if the Vaishyas are exploiting nature, then they're using up all the sources of wealth. And if they're producing artificial wealth, they're going to destroy the economy. And then they're supposed to protect the animals. If you really want a shock of your life, watch the movie Food Incorporated as to how the modern Vaishyas are destroying animals and destroying the earth and destroying the seeds. So in our ISKCON society, we need Vaishyas who are producing genuine wealth. We need wealth. How are you going to build buildings? How are you going to build colleges? How are you going to maintain the Brahmanas? How are you going to maintain the Shudras? How are you going to do anything without wealth? You can't do anything without wealth. And if we're going to be training Vaishyas, we should be training Vaishyas how to create wealth from nature, from the land, from the oceans, mostly from land and water. I don't know if you can create any wealth from the air and from the fire. At least from land and water and animals. And in an honest way, without dealing on the black market. And then I'm going to do the Kshatriyas last, because I've come to the conclusion, actually quite recently, that one of the biggest problems we have in ISKCON is that we haven't developed our Kshatriyas at all. I mean, if you talk to devotees, and really looking at ISKCON as a society, they'll say the one thing that's missing in ISKCON is care of the devotees. You know, you'll join the movement, you'll give your life, you'll give your youthful years, you collect so much money for the movement, and then if you get sick, there's no one to take care of you. People will say, okay, get out on your own. Take care of yourself. You know, we talk about having, devotees are starting to build, like a hospital and a hospice in Vrindavan, and we're starting to talk about building a place for the brahmacharis to retire in Mayapur. But if you want to look at the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 complaints that devotees have about ISKCON, is that I'm not taken care of. And another big complaint is, where's the ethics and morality, which we'll look at in a minute. But the role of the Kshatriyas is to take care of people. Brahmanas are not particularly interested in taking care of people. The Brahmanas will take care of people as teachers and as counselors, but the Brahmanas are not particularly interested in opening a hospital. They're not particularly interested in making sure that the sick get visited and that there's an insurance policy, people get their health needs taken care of and they get clean water and there's enough heat in the building. And it's just not their interest. And the Vaishyas aren't particularly interested in that either, and the Shudras aren't particularly interested in that either. And this is our biggest problem in ISKCON. Where's nice places for the devotees to live? How do people get their health needs taken care of? How do people find a proper husband or wife? How is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending going on? And this is what the Kshatriyas care about. And one of the ways I can see that we can start solving this problem in ISKCON is starting to identify people who are these different varnas. I mean, what just occurred to me this morning, do all you know Rupa Raghunath in Vrindavan?
From the Goshala?
Well, he's connected with Korma Rupa, who runs a Goshala. Mm-hmm. But Rupa Raghunath, first he tried to do this as part of, under ISKCON authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rupa Raghunath tried to do this under the Vrindavan authority. And they said, this is all mundane welfare work. And so he works now independently.
With the Sangha family?
Yes. Yeah. So what is he doing? He's planted trees all over Vrindavan, cleaned up the garbage all over Vrindavan, educated thousands and thousands of poor children, given vocational training to people, especially to women. He's particularly inclined to take care of women and girls, which really hit me. He's especially giving education to girls, especially giving vocational training to women, opening hospitals. So what is he doing? He's providing people with water, with food, with medical care, with education, with vocational training, and all in Krishna consciousness. He's all doing it, giving them spiritual Krishna consciousness. And you'll also see, we'll get to this in another slide, that he's a person of very high ethics. He's very interested in ethics and morality and very open, transparent dealings. And it struck me, he's a Kshatriya. Kshatriya doesn't just mean somebody, or even only mean somebody, who's going to go out with a sword and a shield. If you think about Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Yudhisthira was not into fighting. He was a great warrior, but he really wasn't inclined to fight. He was inclined to forgive. He didn't like fighting. He didn't want war. I mean, his idea was, I want to take care of people. I want to protect people. And if you look at someone like Rupa Raghunath, the more destitute a person is, the more victimized a person is, the more innocent a person is, the more helpless a person is, the more he wants to take care of those people. So that's a kshatriya. And it's interesting that I'm sure we have many, 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 many people of kshatriya mentality in ISKCON. And, you know, I'm wondering, where are they? What are they doing? Probably some of them are working. And I called him this morning. And I said, Rupa, what varna are you? He said, oh, I'm a Vaishnava. I said, no, you're not. You're a kshatriya. And I realized that because we haven't preached properly about kshatriyas, most of our kshatriyas don't even know they're kshatriyas. Some of them think they're brahmanas. Some of them think they're vaishyas. Probably most of them don't think they're shudras. If they're engaged in, and I was thinking, you know, Rupa Raghunath can't collect taxes. He doesn't have a domain. So he collects charity, which then he redistributes. It's almost as if he's collecting taxes. So he's collecting money from people, then he's redistributing it for social welfare in Krishna consciousness. And I've thought about that. We have many devotees who are inclined to do this kind of thing, who are inclined to make sure that people are provided for and people are taken care of. And if we activated these people, then we wouldn't be putting this burden on the brahmanas, who just aren't interested. They really don't care. It's not that they don't care about people. They do care about people. They care about the land, too, and they care about the animals, too, and they care about the arts, also. But it's not going to be something that they're going to put their time and energy into. So what are they producing? The brahmanas are producing wisdom and guidance for the whole society. The sudras are producing all the services and entertainment. The vaishyas are producing honest natural wealth. And the kshatriyas are producing peace, order, and care. They're making sure that everybody has what they need. Now, what's their interest? The interest of the brahmana is truth. Brahmana cares about truth. The shudras care about immediate pleasure. The vaishyas care about wealth. And the kshatriyas, and again, I'm really emphasizing the kshatriyas because I'm seeing that that's a huge gap. They care about morality. So if you ask people what's wrong with ISKCON, they'll tell you either that we have lousy ethics and morality or that devotees aren't being taken care of. You know, what's wrong with ISKCON as a society? Lousy ethics and morality. Now, this is going to sound interesting to you, but I don't think brahmanas are that concerned with ethics and morality. They're concerned more with liberation and truth. Sorry. You know, a brahmana is not going to see material ethics and morality as a very high priority. To the kshatriya, they're everything. I recently met with a devotee who understands that he's a kshatriya. And he was going on and on and on to me about how we have to have morals and ethics in the society. He was saying, look, I found this book about how to be a good Muslim, how to be a good Muslim father, how to be a good Muslim this, how to be a good Muslim that. This is what we need for ISKCON. Where's our morals and ethics? And this is what we're all jumping up and down about. Where's the transparency? Where's the accountability? Where's the proper moral dealings? Who is it that's going to make sure that that's being done in the society? The brahmanas are interested in debating the difference between Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya. Seriously. That's what the brahmins are doing. Don't expect the brahmins to do it. And without the kshatriyas, the vaishyas aren't going to do it. Without the kshatriyas, the vaishyas are going to start making their money illegally. There's nobody to keep them in line. Without the kshatriyas, the shudras are going to start, you know, misusing the arts for sense gratification and making the arts more and more sensual. It's the kshatriyas who have to have morality and ethics in the society. That's their interest. And if they're a devotee, they're going to want to do that for Krishna. They're going to want to have a moral, ethical society for Krishna, not because they're attached to that for its own sake. Now, of course, each varna has its weakness. Now, here I employed a little philosophical speculation. I had quotes for everything else. I have some quotes for this. Prabhupada talks about the real difficulty with the mode of goodness and the brahmanas is pride, which is, of course, a touch of the mode of passion. That's why the brahmanas aren't pure goodness. Let me go through this first, and then we can take questions. That's all. I'm better than everybody else. I have more knowledge than everybody else. I'm free from sinful activities. And, of course, kshatriya are too prone to anger. You didn't give me water when I asked you to take a dead snake around your neck. You know, because they're the protectors, they're the fighters. The Vaishyas, because they're collecting the money, they can tend to greed, which can then use them to exploit material resources or to hoard, and the Shudras especially to lust. Of course, everybody has a problem with all of these. It's not that, I mean, Brahmins also get angry, and Kshatriyas can also get lusty. I mean, it's not that any provinces, it's not that the other ones don't particularly apply. Then this, I don't want to talk about this too much. Prabhupada talks about this in a number of places, that the four ashramas are only for the Brahmanas, three for the Kshatriyas, two for the Vaishyas, and one for the Shudras. And as I said, I don't want to talk about the ashrams too much here. Okay? So, we're going to do a little exercise in a few minutes, but first, I thought if any of you have any questions or discussions. Yes, Prabhu.
First, you said anger, greed, and what about for Brahmins and the Shudras?
I think the Shudras' main problem is lust, and the Brahmin is pride.
Ah, so true.
Prabhupada talks a lot about how the real problem for a brahmana or someone in the mode of... Now, pride, it's interesting, because pride is the mode of passion, and a brahmana is in the mode of goodness, but the real problem for a brahmana is pride. Thinking that I'm better than others, and, you know, I'm free from all these sinful activities, I'm not interested in common ethics and morality, I'm not interested in money, I'm not interested in sense gratification, I'm so good.
This wasn't my question. My question is, what you're saying is an eye-opener, because it rings so true to anyone who knows anything about our ashram. Yet, we don't hear, or do we have, Shastric quotes to base where all this is...
Yes, I had it. What I did for this presentation is I first did a presentation of all quotes. So each slide was packed with quotes. And then I had some graphics. And then I thought, my poor students, are they really going to want to sit through a half an hour of quotes? So I then made, I have a Varnashram. I have a Varnashram, yes. I have a Varnashram.ppt and I have a Varnashram1.ppt.
This is my
yes. So I decided to just present the findings without the quotes.
So it seems that because...
I had some quotes, obviously, so I had some.
Because Srila Prabhupada insisted on first establishing a Brahminical culture, that the ethics and morals were always sacrificed in the fire of transcendental knowledge.
Oh, so yeah. They sure were. And so was care of people.
Yeah.
So was the care of people. But the idea is that if you establish Brahmanas... The Brahmanas are supposed to be able to see that these other things are necessary and train and educate the other classes.
Are there steps being taken right now? Or you're just teaching this singly? This is your mission? Or,
as of this morning.
Support?
As if I'd say I understood, I really started to understand this 10 days ago. Now, what I've understood for a long... What I've preached for a long time, for several years now, is that Brahmanas protect knowledge, Kshatriyas protect people, Vaishyas protect natural resources and animals, and Shudras protect the arts and the skills. I've been preaching that for years. But it was only 10 days ago that I made the different synapses in my brain went together. And because I work with the devotee care committee, and it was, they finally went together. And what happened due to Gaura Shakti Das in New Vrajna. And he's talked to me before, but it's not when he talked to me, he was talking about protecting people and taking care of people and morals and ethics, and all of a sudden it went, oh, I've been focusing for a long time on the Vaishyas and how the Vaishyas have to generate honest sources of wealth and have to generate sources of wealth that protects the natural resources and the animals. So I've looked at that for a long time. And I think being in ISKCON, where we just assume that there aren't any Kshatriyas, we never, you know, to us Kshatriyas means I'm going out with a bow and arrow and a brahmastra on the battlefield. How often were the Kshatriyas on the battlefield? You know, they weren't regularly out on the battlefield. They were taking care of the citizens. That was their source of happiness. Their source of happiness was taking care of the citizens, making sure everybody had everything that they needed. And it was just when I was talking to Gaurishankar, it's like, oh, come on, Amrila, you've been preaching. The Kshatriyas take care of the people. What do you think that means? Why do we have this big hole in ISKCON? And the Vaishyas and the Shudras are directly administered by the Kshatriyas. They're not directly administered by the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas are mostly just channeling to the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas are taking care of the rest of the society. And it's really hard for the Brahmanas alone to make sure that the Vaishyas are generating honest wealth and protecting natural resources. And the Brahmanas don't want to get involved in all that kind of stuff. They want to sit there with their books and their mantras and their fires. And like Arjuna said to that one Brahmana, he said, "Do you think that all the royal personalities are just having sacrifices with the Brahmanas?" So occasionally the Brahmanas might get out of their, you know, might close their books, take their nose out of the books and close the books and get away from their fire sacrifices and say, hey, Vane is causing a lot of problem here. I guess we got to deal with it. And then what do? They just went, talked to Vane, killed him, and left. They left. You know, when Anga disappeared, they installed Vane, and then they left. When Vane was causing a problem, they killed Vane, then they left. And again there was a problem. Oh, I guess we got to get involved again. Okay, let's produce Prithu. They don't manage things directly. So if you don't have Kshatriyas, no one's going to be making sure that people have honest means of wealth. No one's going to be taking care of people's needs. No one's going to be making sure that the Shudras are getting their needs taken care of. And therefore you can't have a society. It's also interesting to me that for many, many years now I've been preaching about the ashrams. So I could also give a whole class on the ashrams, how people shouldn't mix ashrams, how you shouldn't try to be a renounced householder or an enjoying renunciate. Two very popular ashrams in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, we don't believe in four ashrams, we only have two. We have the brahmachari who's trying to enjoy, at least the brahmachari, vanaprastha sannyasi, who's trying to enjoy subtly all the aspects of the grihastha ashram, making sure I got plenty of wealth and plenty of adoring members, generally women looking up to me, and plenty of power. And then we have the grihasthas who don't want to have an honest job, don't want to have children, don't want to live in a house. You know, they just want to go travel with the preaching tour and preach because this household of life is all Maya. So we have these two strange...
They don't want to raise a family because it's time.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So we have these two strange ashrams, and then we wonder why people don't get purified in the ashrams. You lose... The ashrams are meant to scientifically purify you, but you got to do them right. You know, if you don't use the recipe right, your cake falls, you know. It's like if you want to get purified from the ashrams, you got to do the ashrams correctly. So I've been preaching this for a long time, but I'm seeing it's the same with the varnas. We're mixing the varnas. We're having people who are of Vaishya nature or Kshatriya nature acting as Brahmanas because they think it's not very nice to really be a Vaishya or Kshatriya. But they can't really be Brahmanas. You can't be something. It just doesn't work, you know. Whatever. At least Krishna says it, and I don't know, I believe him. He says you can't be someone else's nature. Whatever nature you have, that's the nature you're going to do. You know, a woman can't act like a man. A man can't act like a woman. A Vaishya can't act like a Shudra. A Brahmachari can't act like a Grihastha. It just doesn't work. You'll end up acting like your nature anyway. So my main question is, where are all these frustrated Kshatriyas? Since we're not giving them facility in ISKCON to function. You know, Rupa had to go out of the... you know, he's still 100% an ISKCON man. But he had to go out of the ISKCON infrastructure. So where are they hiding?
No.
So I'm assuming that they're mostly hiding as Vaishyas or as Brahmanas, or else they're somewhat separate. I mean, one thing in the community in North Carolina where I lived for 16 years, there was one devotee who needed some dental work done. It cost $2,000. And his wife, she and I were very good friends, and she just said, you know, our insurance only covers $1,000, and we don't know where we're going to get the rest of the money. My husband's in a lot of anxiety because he's in a lot of pain. And I went around the community and collected the money. Mostly because she was just my good friend. She did a lot of service for the school. And he was overwhelmed. He just said, I can't believe that the community came forward to help me. And I went to the TEL president. I said, you know, we really should have a fund where everyone contributes to the fund. And then whenever anyone has a problem, it's paid for out of that fund. And you have somebody, you know, you have a council administering it, so they make sure that it's not being misused. But I wasn't willing to do it. I was willing to do it once for a friend. But I wasn't willing to manage something like that. So I see we could start with things like that, with starting to say to people, hey, you know, we need care for the people in the community. And it would be like a tax. Would you be willing to start something in the community where everyone, like, people think of it like an insurance policy? And this is what groups who are opposed to insurance and opposed to government handouts like the Amish, this is the kind of thing that they often do. A lot of Christian organizations where people pay into someone who then administers care for the community. But I see only by giving these people the social status and giving these people the permission to be both devotees and kshatriyas, are we ever going to develop a society? I don't see how we can, you know, we're ISKCON right now. We lost that S somewhere along the way. We can't figure out where to find it. And I think if instead of looking for warrior types,
because sometimes it's always the men. It's always like there's men. It's like
it's always this warrior type. I think instead of looking for the warrior type, if we looked for the protecting type and the caring type. Another thing you notice about a kshatriya, and I was thinking about this with Rupa, is the kshatriya always wants to expand. They always want to expand. Vaishya also. Vaishya and kshatriya both always want to expand. So look for people who are always trying to expand. I want to protect more people. I want to take care of more people. I want to have more projects, or I want to generate more wealth. So, of course, this is going to start through education. It always starts in the Brahmanas. It's going to start through education. It's going to start through a vision. And I think it's also going to start, we will be talking tomorrow about organizational culture. What kind of culture do we have in ISKCON? Do we have a bureaucratic culture? Do we have a caring culture? Do we have an entrepreneurial risk-taking culture? And how to develop culture? What I'd like to do for the rest of the class is I'd like you to pretend that all of us are going to go to a country location near a Western city, I meant to say. I hope this was helpful for you. I hope you got something that was worth your time. We want to go to a country location out in the country. Sorry, I was multitasking when I wrote this. We're going to go to a country location near Western City, and we need a one-year plan. We want to develop a society. Now, devotees have tried to do this many, 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 many times. It hasn't usually worked. And I want us to divide ourselves up into varnas. Okay? And each of us come up with a plan for your varna. You're going to have about 10 minutes to develop your plan, and then we'll have 15 minutes where you all just talk about what you came up with. So, what?
I said one of our varnas
is leaving. Yeah, one of our varnas is leaving. You're very welcome. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Very much. Yes.
You're welcome to come to the classes the rest of the week too.
Is that post charitable?
This recording is shareable, yes.
Yeah,
tomorrow we'll be talking about organizational culture. The next day about organizational structure.
So if I don't have a tour, I'll definitely be here.
Okay, next, well, I just want to give you a little synopsis. The next day about ISKCON in relationship to the outside society.
Yeah, that's my main interest.
That will be doing so. That's org culture, org structure, outside society. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then Friday we'll be talking about preserving ISKCON. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for coming. Okay, I'm going to turn off this.